Okay. No, I don't want to translate because I want it to stay in Japanese. So I pulled up this site where, can anyone read this? Just.
I could read bigger devices.
Well, can anyone read the Japanese ideoglyphs? No? Okay. So
I can read a portion of it.
So I have to ask that seriously, because I'm going to ask you to try and make sense of the page, and I want to know who can read it, because if you can read it, I'm going to ask you to not participate. Because if you can read it and make sense of it, you're going to be able to answer the questions. But I want you to see how, even without the context of content, we can make assumptions about what things are, where we are, and what's going to happen, right? So as we look at this page, where are we? What is this site? What's it do? What's it sell? I mean, you can't even tell from the URL, right? It says M Pantry, but it's the Japanese brand Maruson. Candy something that appears to be candy or at least food oriented, because as we start to look around, we see a cake, we see pouches of something, we see bread. As we scroll down, we see chocolate, we see silicone molds. So there's a bit of English in here. It's fascinating to me on the Japanese sites, the mixture that we get of languages. Like, why is special price in English? Right? I mean, you can say special price in Japanese. Why is it in English? We don't see that on the US sites, right? You don't go to a site and just some of it is suddenly in Japanese to get your attention. It would get our attention, but we'd have no idea what it meant. But we can look at this site and we can understand what we are seeing even though we can't read it. What's in the center column where it starts with decorating icing? If you were to describe what that is or the types of information or objects that are there, what are they?
Product.
Yeah, it's featured product, right? What about the right column? So under the funny little headless girl with it.
Left column.
Image.
Left column.
Left column. Yeah, the one that looks like an L is left. Okay. Did you learn that as a kid? The one that looks like L is left?
No.
Yeah, and if you can't tell, then this one, loser. So what's in the left column? And I'm left-handed, too. Oh, well. What's over here in this other column?
On the right side?
Left side, sorry.
Left side.
Left side.
Well, there's just promotional messages, like banners.
Yeah, promos, and then we get down to, I think that these are vanilla beans. Not sure, but I think they're vanilla beans. So more promos, but then we get here and it suddenly becomes what?
Navigational.
Yeah, it becomes navigational. Can't read any of that except categories, but even if categories were not in English, if you saw that, and on mouse over it did this, would you understand what it was? Yeah, you'd know that they were links. It's presented as a bullet list. It appears to be grouped in categories. It must be navigational.
And sometimes they will name the page in English at the bottom. When you roll over, and you can see at the bottom with the URL.
Sometimes,
URL. Like if I'm trying to find out the About Us link on a site that I don't understand the language, I'll drill until I find company or whatever.
This is when you realize that coding languages and internet technology are all based around the Latin alphabet. And no matter where you are in the world and what language you speak, you're going to type your code on an alphanumeric keyboard. Yeah, you don't look down in that URL line and see, the different Japanese characters. So we've got navigation over here, shopping guide, obviously, but we understand these are links and this is contact information, even though all we really see are phone numbers. Then over in the right column, once again, we see what's here. But what is this a calendar of?
Holidays? Events?
I don't know.
Specials? Not
applicable. 10th of October.
No. See, this one, I don't know. Can't tell. I don't have sufficient context here. But this is a good example of how in your wireframes, we need enough information to provide context about where you are, what you're seeing, and what you can do. So in some cases, just the structure of the page tells us what it is. If it's a bullet list in the left column, it's probably navigation.
The calendar means that if the letters in, or numbers in red, that means they're closed for business. They're not open for business.
Maybe.
Well, that's what it says.
Oh, does it? Oh, okay. Well then, you read it for us. So, it's like, I don't know if it starts on Sunday or
yeah,
not.
Sunday.
I assume that it does, and now I know that these are dates that we are closed for business. So they must have retail locations, because I can shop 24/7, right? Online, that is. So, we can get context. We can figure out where we are and what's going on. We understand that these tabs are navigational. We understand that there are some icons that have become nearly universal. So I see the little shopping cart.
But isn't there's a coffee cup right next
yeah,
to it?
Yeah, there's a coffee cup next to it.
Can you
I have
scroll?
No idea.
Uh-oh. Oh my. I can't read
click
again.
Click it. Uh-oh.
Wait. Be patient. Sign in. Create an account.
Oh. Maybe community.
It looks like there's lots of security.
I don't know. But imagine now, if you give your prototype to someone, and it's filled with lorem ipsum and gray boxes with X's on it, and it says things like nav1, nav2, nav3, button1, button2, button3, are you going to be any further ahead for prototype testing than we are on this page? If you land on this page from a Google search and I say, where are you? You can't even answer the first question. I'm on mpantry.com. I don't know what this page is. Where can you go? I don't know how I got here, so I can go anywhere those tabs at the top will take me. How did you get here? I haven't the faintest idea because I don't know where I am. Right? So, a wireframe filled with placeholder, lorem ipsum, and gray boxes does this to your end user. It's untestable. So for those of you, I have some comments in some of your wireframes that you've been posting. I've said you're going to need to increase the fidelity before you go into testing because I don't know that there's enough on this page for people to understand where they are and what they can do. So there's just a little generic thing that says, calendar will go here. Well, that's very nice as a reminder to you, but if that calendar is part of the experience, that calendar needs to be in the wireframe. But we also need to make sure that it fits and it works, not just that's where we want to put something. So if you've gotten those comments or you still have lots of lorem ipsum, you don't have to go out and write all new copy. You don't have to go out and find images for everything. But if you're using say, the Kung Fu Academy, for example, there's already copy on that site. Just go copy it off of, right? They've got text on it. Copy it off the existing site. You don't have to use all of it. Just get some for context. Copy an image that is already there. So what if you resize it and it pixelates when you make it larger? It's as long as I can see the image, I get context. Put place header or page headers on and pay or titles. Put nav labels on, button labels, so that people have a sense of where they are. What we will often do in prototypes, if we have like a big grid of something, say you've got a search results page, we don't necessarily know what everything is. I managed to not get that one on me. I know what all of my navigation labels are because I've got a site map and hopefully they're already in your wireframes. So those will be filled in. But I might not know what all of my filtering criteria are going to be. Right? And I don't necessarily want to take the time to go out and find 25 different product images or something to put on a search results page. So what I'll do is I'll fill in enough to provide context. So let's say that this is size, color, material, small, medium, large, extra large, red, green, blue, yellow, cotton, silk, other. I only need a couple of these things to set context, right? Material is cotton, silk, linen, blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. Polyester, scratchy stuff, burlap. I don't have to have a full set of images. I might put in images for the top row and then placeholders if I just need people to understand they're on a search results page. So it says, you know, real product names. So sweater one, sweater two, sweater three. And this might say product, 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 and placeholder. So I don't have to have all real content. I just have to have enough to set the context of the page so that people understand where they are and what they may be able to do. So when we talk about fidelity, it doesn't matter if you're doing paper prototypes, click-throughs, or something code-based. You all are going to have the same target level of fidelity. If you show anyone any page of your wireframes and ask those three questions, where are you, how did you get here, and what can you do from here, where can you go, or what can you do from here, they should be able to answer it. There should be enough content to answer those three questions for any of your wireframes. And if that's the case, you're ready. You can build a prototype with that. All right, let's take a look at a clickable prototype. So this is the Art and Orchids website. So in this particular case, we've got an HTML click-through. This is done with a lot of smoke and mirrors. So this is just image mapping and simple JavaScript things. All right, so just little image rollovers and stuff like that. We've got some placeholder copy. Like, you'll notice, this is just photo. Value proposition and welcome statement appears here. I would prefer to have a real image and a real value prop there, but the client hadn't written it, so it's what's there. Or I could have made something up. I'm sometimes careful about the content that I make up for prototype testing because clients will inevitably say, oh, I like that, let's just go with that, right? And you can't just be tongue-in-cheek about everything that you write because then it's not going to be the correct voice for prototype testing. So went generic here. And it's superimposed on a large, full-bleed, evocative image from the B&B or of iconic Hawaiian scenery. Now, in testing, people will stop and read this, and they'll chuckle, and they'll be like, I don't understand. And as a moderator, you can just say, well, we don't have the photography yet, and we're not quite sure what we want to describe because we don't have the picture. It's going to be a big picture with a descriptive statement on top of it that makes you want to stay at the B&B. Oh, okay. And they get over it, and you just move on. But we do have real content. And we also have what appear to be real links, right? So not all of them work, but some of them do. Some of them, like we've got the rollover state here, we don't, but it does change cursor. So some of these, I don't know if any of the ones down here, yes. Okay, so we have fake links all over the place here. And that allows us to avoid link sniffing. Because if I say, come here, find a room that will sleep up to four people and make a reservation for 3 days or something like that. So that's the task. Now they land on the site and there might be a series of questions like, well, which room? Do they have a pool? Stuff like that. And so we can navigate around. And this is a case where I think we've got top level pages for each one of these. So that if people go into each one of these sections, they can at least see what would be there. Not all of the deeper pages, however, exist.
So what was the task you assigned for your...
In this particular case?
Yeah.
I think we had a series of questions for them. It was basically like, find a room that could sleep four people, find out if they're kid-friendly, find if there are, what can be done in the area, find the price for the room, stuff like that.
So let's see, if I assign a task of making a reservation, and now, for my prototype, I'm not going to build all the other pages, but can I do a like hybrid thing, like for other pages that have paper stuff?
Like we don't paper typically then? Mix digital and the
paper.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what we may sometimes do is, if we're doing a series of tests and we find something that is really systematically failing and we can't update the prototype on the fly, we may sketch an alternative on paper, and when we get to a certain page, if people have difficulty, we show them what we've sketched up and said, well, if it were like this, what would you do? And show an alternative. But we don't often go back and forth between paper and clickable in the browser. It seems to be a bit of a drag on the participants' ability to track what they're doing. We're asking them to switch modes of operation between looking at the page and looking at the screen. So we tend to pick all one or all the other.
Well, then if that's the case, I'm going to have to build the whole site clickable.
Well, not necessarily.
I mean, you might only have
six pages. You're on Casamora Caves.
Yeah, but still, like, well, let's say if I assign them a task of making a reservation, and then there's so many jump points on the site that you can go to that make a reservation page. If I just build that reservation page as a clickable, then how do you expect, okay, here's the page, why don't you make a reservation?
Right. Well, we would narrow their task down a little bit, right? So part of what they would want to do is find out if there are cave tours, what are the different types of cave tours, are there any available on the dates you're going to be there, and then reserve a particular type
of cave. So you pretty much kind of ignored the other, paths, like they go, well, first of all, they do some research on the tours they want to do, then they go to make a reservation, because the first part you pretty much skipped it, right? So you just go,
the part of doing the research, right? Well, no, in a case like this, we're going to want to guide them, we're going to want to give them a task that is more than one step, right? Okay. So they land on the site, and we have a series of questions. What are the different types of tours? And then they go find them. You're really interested in the maze tour. Is it available on the dates you're going to be there? Sometime between January 10th and January 20th. And then they have to go find the calendar, look to see if the maze tour is available on that time, and then when they see if it is available, you can say, great, let's make a reservation for four people and set an arbitrary date. You built your prototype to support this, right? You know in advance what wireframes are going to be necessary to learn about the maze tour, to find the calendar for the maze tour, and to reserve the maze tour. So I don't have to build pages for finding the availability of the professional spelunkers tour. I don't need those. I don't need to do reservations for large parties or for a different tour type. I only really need the wireframes for the core set of tasks, and then a few extraneous ones in case people get off the path.
But isn't that you're limiting the path already? Like what you said, like
if your site's only like six pages to begin with.
All
right.
Well, along the same line, I mean, the links that you have at the bottom that you make clickable, so they don't do links sniffing, but you don't want to do a complete wireframe. Can they just all go to the same page?
They could. What we'll often do is we'll enable fake links throughout the site that go to the same generic page that basically says, sorry, this page is not available in the prototype.
Right.
So they click it and they get to that page, and then that's my question, right? It's like, oh, what did you expect? Why did you go here? What did you want to do or see? And then we just hit the back button.
Then you wouldn't have to implement every wireframe, but at least you could have the links would be clickable, so all those little minor links on the bottom.
Right.
You just wanted to
I do not have every page, so not all of these rooms. So, like, I have details for the garden room, but not for the rainbow room, not for the orchid room. I do for amenities, because it was part of the question, and I do for rates and policies. But if I go to the gallery, I don't have all of these, I don't think. Nope, like, I don't have that one. I don't have everything under eco-conscious. So I think in eco-conscious I have just the solar page. The links are here, but they don't do anything. So I've got some extraneous pages and some focus page. In this particular case, there were no questions about eco-consciousness being asked. I didn't ask people to say, if one of the key questions was, what are their green practices? Then I would have had to build out more pages and more content here. But it wasn't one of the questions, so I just have the top-level page. If they stumble into it, they see it. Most people never even clicked on it. It wasn't part of the experience. The other thing when you have clickable prototypes that you'll see people doing is that they play when you're not looking. So you're moderating the test, you ask them a question, you're writing something down, and when you look back up, they're somewhere else. They've clicked right on through the prototype. They're behaving like they do as if they were really browsing a live site. Even though it might look like this, they're treating it like it's the real thing. People are really, really good at pretend and role play. So even when it's black and white, even when it's got placeholders, even when some of the links are broken, for all intents and purposes, most people in prototype testing think this is a website. And they would be perfectly content if this were the final website that they were using. Right? Because it's giving them what they need. It's not the prettiest thing, but it works for me, and I can make a reservation here. You know, this is a nice place. I like this. But they treat it like it's real. So they can role play really effectively, and they will behave like they would at home, even though you're in a lab.
So how would you handle that, though, if you're having a study like this, and you look away and you come back, and there's someplace totally different in your prototype, then what do you do? You
don't want to stop them. It's like, wait. I need to see what we're doing, remember. And so one of the things we use is what's called the Think Aloud protocol. So at the very beginning, we introduce them. Let me go back over here. There are on the resources, or no, sorry, sample documents page, I think. Down under usability script, we're gonna come back to this and talk about it in a moment. But there's an intro here, and this is an example of some things of not to do. So you can use this as like a structural outline, but don't model your own script on this. So we say things like this. Today we're going to look at how information is organized and presented on a particular website. This is only a partial prototype of the entire site. Doesn't work away, blah, blah, blah. So we set up in advance, we tell people not everything's going to work. Some things may break. You didn't break it. It's not your fault. We're going to ask a lot of questions. And we're going to use what we call the Think Aloud protocol. Let me jump down and see if that's in here. There we go. I think somewhere in here. Basically, what we're saying with the Think Aloud protocol is I want you to talk out loud about what you are reading, what you are looking for, what you are looking at, what you expect, what you want. Before you click on anything, tell me where you're going to click and why you're going to click on it. It's going to slow us down, but it's important for me to understand what you need and expect from the website. So people forget to talk out loud, so we remind them all through the hour. Talk out loud. Why do you want to click on this? Where do you want to go? And get them into that habit. So if we look down while we're taking notes, and they click ahead off, we look back and we're like, wait. Let's go back to where we were. Remember, I want to hear what you're looking at and why you're clicking on things. And they're perfectly cool with that. We back them up, we stop them, and then they're, oh, well, I was just exploring. I thought it was kind of pretty, so I was looking at this, and I realized I needed new shoes, and blah, blah, and they're off doing their own tasks all of a sudden on your prototype. And so you just steer them back to where you were and start again. We say things, though, this is an important part here. There are no wrong answers, and you're not being judged, scored, or graded on your ability to locate information or to complete tasks. If something breaks or fails, it's not your fault. It means that we haven't designed this properly, and your feedback is important to help us understand how to make it better. And no matter how often you may say this to people, it's not your fault if something breaks. Some participants take it personally. They will say things through testing, they will say things at the end of testing, I wish I could have done better for you. Oh, I shouldn't have done that because then it broke, right? And they will internalize the failures of the design. So we have to remind them on a regular basis that we're not judging them. It broke because of bad design decisions or because of technology that wasn't capable, not because of something the person did. So we often have to reassure them. It's okay, don't worry about it. We have to fix that. Thanks for helping us understand why it didn't do what you needed it to do. Now, what did you really want out of this? and get them to explain what their expectation was, so they're not internalizing the failure. People take it personally even when asked not to. We also ask people to make sure that they are that they know that they can ask questions at any time during the testing. So if you have a question about something, feel free to stop and ask. And remember, you don't answer questions. So when they answer a question, you play therapist and you reflect it back to them. So they say, well, why when I clicked on this button did it take me here instead of there? What would you call this button, right? Or what did you need it to do instead? So you just figure out a way to rephrase that question and turn it back about what are your needs or what are your expectations. And it takes practice to do that. Another thing, there was a great blog post I recently read asking people about their future behavior versus their past behavior. And if anyone does extensive usability testing, this is something you probably already know. When you ask people, what would you do if, or what would you do when at some point in the future, they almost always pause, think, get a reflective look on their face, look up and to the right, and they're thinking about what's the ideal situation, and if everything were ideal, what would I do? It's like asking people what they want in a cell phone, right? They want a cell phone that allows them to call people. Well, yeah, that's what I want, but I want it pretty, I want it blue, I want it to bark like a dog when a phone call comes in. I mean, are these really important things for us to know? Would anyone have ever said, I want a cell phone with a touch screen and a camera and a voice recognition system in it? Probably not. Because when we ask people about their future behavior, they're idealizing the situation, they're imagining things. They're not really basing it in actual need. So instead, we ask retroactive questions. What did you do on Amazon last time you visited? What did you buy? How did you get there? What did you look at? And we ask for self-reports of what their past behavior was, because that's a much more realistic indicator of what they will do on a website. Not what they think they will do, but what they have done in the past.
Just like a job interview.
Yeah, in a way, it is.
Past behavior is the predictor of the future, and yeah.
Right, and so it's the same thing in usability. So when we say things like, what did you expect, or what did you need, we're asking about like this moment right now, but we're very careful about asking questions like, if you were to completely change the navigational structure on this site, what would you make it? Not a practical question for usability testing. All 12 people are going to give you 12 different answers. There's going to be no consistency in their responses. You're not going to get anything out of it, right? So you need to be much more targeted. So this particular script, talk about, we've already said a few times, we don't want to be directive and we don't want to guide, right? We don't want to tell people what to do. So if you take a look at this script, it was written too prescriptively. It tells people too much. So here's the setup. You're an investment analyst who regularly reviews and writes about this company, the company, for a quarterly investment newsletter. All right, so you have a series of tasks here to do. You've just received an email notice that the latest quarterly report has been released. The email contains a link to the homepage. Locate and open the Q4 2003 report. I just told them exactly what to do. I should be really surprised if they fail, right? How can I rephrase this to be more generic and less guided?
You receive the email and that you're gonna write a review about it or something like that.
Okay, well.
What are you gonna do?
We at least have to be specific enough to tell them that they're gonna need to look at a particular report,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we could either say something like, you got this email, and you know for your next, whatever you write for, this investment newsletter, that you're gonna have to write about the performance of this company for your next newsletter. They should know, if I'm testing people who are really using the site, they should know that it means I have to read this Q4 performance report, right? So I don't want to tell them in advance, there is a link to this, to the Q4 performance report. Follow that link and read the report, right? I need to be more task-oriented. You have to write about this company's fourth quarter performance. How would you learn about that? Now they have to scan the email to see what content is in the email, what links are available, is anything going to tell me about the fourth quarter performance of this company? So there might be three links in the email, or it might be that they don't understand Q4 2003 report is the performance report. If they don't know where to click, I have a problem, right? But I can't tell them where to click. After scanning the quarterly report, you're interested in the current value of the company stock. Find and review the current stock information. All right, so I'm on the website. It's opened up a PDF for me that I'm reading. And now I've just been told I need to find the current value of the company stock. Is this okay? Or is this too guided, too directive? Not all of these are going to be crappy, by the way. Part of this exercise is seeing ones that work, ones that don't work.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, this one's not bad, right? You're looking at the performance report. What's the current stock value? Now, for them, they could look for the current stock value on the site, but they might also do something like go to marketwatch.com and put in the ticker symbol. Ah, look, right there, current market value. That would tell me something, like they don't know the stock value is available on the company's corporate site because they went to a third-party site to get that information. They have no idea that there's a stock ticker in the footer or something like that. So that gives me information. You do not want to miss the next report to be issued, and you'd like to know when it will be released. Go to the business calendar and look for the date of the next report release.
First sentence is okay, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, why not the second?
You're telling them how to do what you're trying to find.
Go to the, click on the, press the, anytime you've got something directive like that, no. Back it off. How would we rewrite this? You don't want to miss the next report because you have to write about this company quarterly. What would we do? How do we replace the that second sentence?
How would you
find the...
Trying to get notified or something like that.
Okay. How would you get on an email list to be notified of the reports? Well, they might already say, I'm already on the list. Look, I got this email from them. Okay, that's not quite the question. So, the piece of information that we're looking for here is what's the next release date? Yeah. Not really, you don't want to miss the report. The real question is, what's the next release date? Right? So we actually do have a problem in the first one, in the first sentence. It's not directive. It didn't set us up properly for what the real task is. So you might need to rephrase the whole thing by saying, you have to schedule your writing plan for the next quarter. And you need to plan for when their next performance report comes out. When is that? So now it's like, all right, there must be a calendar of report dates or something somewhere. Let me go and see if I can find that. So I'm not telling them where to go, but I'm indicating somewhere on the site you can find information about when the reports are released. Find it. But I'm phrasing it in the form of a realistic task. You want to plan your writing schedule for the next report, but you need to know when that is. And I'm not telling you where to go. Recently, you read an article about John Doe, the chairman of the board of Company X, and you think you remember him serving on the board of directors for the company. Go to the board of directors listing and look for information about John Doe. Okay, by now you should know. What is wrong with this? Go to the, right? You see those. How can we rephrase this? So the first part is the setup. We're probably okay with that. You recognize the name John Doe. You think that he has served on the board of directors for the company, but you're not exactly sure. So what's the underlying question?
Well, you want to find out more information about John Doe, right? So
yeah.
how do you find out more information about John Doe?
Yeah, there are two questions. Lisa says the first one, is John Doe on the board of directors for this company? Because he's on the board of directors of another company, and you think he's also on the board for this company. So, you want to find out if he's on the board. And then we might actually have to split this into two questions, right? We might have to ask a specific bio question about John Doe. Something like, is he on the board of directors for this company? And how long, and if yes, how long has he been on it? Because he serves on both of these boards, right? So now we're posing two questions, but we're not saying how to answer it. Is he on the board? And if yes, how long has he been on it? So now I have to go find the board of directors list, but I don't want to, I shouldn't be told where. When you first came to this website, you first noticed the title of a press release on the homepage about the company having a strong performance for 2003. Find and read that press release. Okay, there's a couple things wrong here. What's the first one that jumps out at you? Yeah?
It tells you it's on the homepage, or you can...
Well, it says when you first came to the website, you noticed, oh, it does say it's on the homepage. Duh. Okay, yes. So right away, I've told you, oh, go to the homepage and look for a press release about the performance in 2003. What else is wrong here?
It assumes that you noticed it.
Yeah. I'm telling you what you remember, right? I don't know if you noticed that or not. I'm saying you saw it and you remember it, right? And then I'm telling you where it is and where to go and what to read. If you fail at this task, something's wrong. Go to the homepage, look for the 2003 press release, and read it. I have told you everything you need. I don't know if you noticed it or not. So I might have to rephrase this. You know, I might want to do something else, like, how do I get this person back to the homepage to see if they notice this press release? Or do I simply say, you know, if you wanted information for the media about this company's performance for the whole year, where would you find it? So now if they go to the homepage and they happen to notice the press release, great. But they might just go to the footer and look for a press and media link and go there and see if they can find something. So there's probably more than one way to find that piece of information. My real question is, why do I need them to do it from the homepage? Why is an alternate path not acceptable in my prototype? Is there something about going there? Well, it turns out that the client was really concerned about the position of press releases on the homepage, right? If people come to the homepage, our press releases are one of our key PR channels. You know, and people come here and we want to see them right on that homepage. Do people see it? Are they going to find it? So I need to be a little bit more manipulative here. I need to figure out, how do I get that person to the homepage? And then how do I see if they notice press releases? So I can't tell them what to do. In this particular case, I'm not sure. I would probably break it down into two separate tasks, and I'd figure out one way to get them to the homepage, and then a subsequent question about whether or not they can find press releases on that page. Generally speaking, when you're constructing your tasks, people should not be able to complete a task from the page they are currently on when you ask it, right? You want them to have at least one click to go somewhere else to do it. If you ask them to complete a task on the page where they already are, it seems like stupidly obvious to them. Oh, well, there.
I don't understand that. What do you mean you say you can't complete the task on the page that you're on? I mean,
well, it depends on the, I mean, if it's a dirt simple task, like now place your order. You can only do that from the page you're on.
Yeah, but if you're like on the order page you were showing earlier at Urban Outfitters, you're going to do all that from that page.
Right, but that's an Ajax page.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
You're going to different states of that.
But would you have a set of tasks where one task is you're going to go to a particular page and then have some basically tasks all around that page, associated with that page? Or you're almost like saying every task means I got to go to another page.
Or another mode or state.
Something.
So if it's Ajax oriented, the point is really what we're usually testing is something, you know, like, can people find it? Can they interact with it? Do they understand it? Right.
Right.
So if all I have to do is look at the page, so let's say for example that we're on the page where the stock price information is. So if we say something, you know, like, is the company's current stock price, stock value on the site somewhere? And so they go find that page. And then my next question is, what's the value? And they go, $17.83. Right?
Right?
I should have just rolled that into the first question.
So actually, I mean, at this point, the person that's putting this task together is very familiar. I mean, you know, as a designer, the kind of issues that you're really concerned about,
right,
which is guiding the task in the first place. Do you ever do anything where you also actually on purpose give them something that's so specific that they can't, even there's enough information here that if they can't do it, you say, maybe I got the wrong person taking these tests?
We very rarely say I have the wrong person taking the test, because most of the time we've got a pretty good sense of who the real users are,
and here
we've tried to recruit them. Right.
I mean, I want the site to work for
right.
The corner cases, but there are some people who are so challenged regardless. You
know. Yeah, anyone who's been through prototype testing or usability testing knows that a couple of the people that you get are going to struggle on the easiest tasks. They're just going
to
have a tough time.
That out.
There's a range of intelligence in humans, and the average just happens to be in the capable category. But sometimes we get people who have trouble. They just really struggle. And a lot of times, unfortunately, what happens in testing is that when people start to fail, they get anxious, and then it has a cascade effect, and they continue to struggle and get stressed out.
But do you try to make it work then? I mean, if you could make that site work for that type of person, then it would actually work for everybody else then too.
That's not funny. That's not always the best approach. So do you know what the Pareto principle is? P-A-R-E-T-O, Pareto principle, or the 80-20 rule. You might also know it by that.
Yeah.
So there comes a point in designing things where designing for the infrequent corner case or edge case makes it easier for a small percentage of people at the expense of complexity for the majority. So there comes a point where we have to say it is not going to be equally easy for everyone. Mm-hmm. It is going to be efficient, easy, and enjoyable for the majority, we'll say 80%. Right. The remaining 20% of the people are going to have an extra step or a bit more complexity, but they're not the majority. If we try to make the corner cases easy and efficient, we are going to sacrifice the experience of the majority. It is going to mean complexity or extra steps or extra ambiguity or something in order to accommodate the corner case. Sure. It is almost always the better choice to have the minority of the corner cases deal with the complexity than to have the majority have a more complex experience in order to accommodate simplicity for the minority. It's like, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Well, it's like when you say to delete something, it says, you sure you want to delete it? But yeah, you're sure, but wait a minute, I just said delete it, don't ask me 3 or 4 times, or something like that along that line.
Right, and but there are times when we want that, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, sure. So we have to deal with automaticity and lack of focus and attention and stuff like that, so that if something is really important and irreversible, it's good to interrupt the experience and make them think about it, right? But it's a good example of how sometimes you need complexity, but sometimes you need to say, look, I am not going to add complexity to the majority in order to accommodate a corner case.
I hope the corner case is motivated enough that they want the information.
Right, exactly, yeah. Or it's not that it's hard, it's just it's one extra step, you know? It's all right, it's an extra click, I don't care. 5 out of 1,000 people are gonna deal with it. I can live with that. But if 900 people out of 1,000 are going to get an extra click because of that one person or those 5 people, no, I don't like that decision. All right, so you've seen the prototype here. Most of the things here are clickable. There were a few things, for example, the live map that was embedded here. So that's a real Google map in there. Yeah?
Sorry, just backing up to that script again, like on the right side, I was just noticing you've got like a little... This is, I'm guessing, what the note taker is writing down as the person is doing.
Yeah.
Are those numbers supposed to correspond to the site, the way you number the
those
site
map? Those are the page codes on the site map. And this shows, it says record the click path here, but this shows different ways that you can get from where you are to the information at the end of the task. So they're starting on the home page. They need to end up at IR4_2. There's a direct link there. There's a navigational shortcut, and then there's a direct navigational path.
Okay, so are they reading this document, or this is your
no,
script to ask
the script
them?
Is never shown to the participant. This is for you. This is the moderator. I'm glad you brought that question up, because in 2 weeks I almost always see that, where people say, here's what you're doing,
yeah.
And they give the participant the script. No, the script is for the moderator. You speak to the participant what they need when they need it, and you're taking notes about how they are completing the tasks, what their expectations are, and where they make mistakes.
So you know that these are the possible ways that they could go about it, and so you can
Yeah. And in this particular case, I wrote down showing that, look, there's more than one way to get there. I could either say these are the ways to get there, which one did they choose, or I could have written down this was the page sequence that they went through in order to complete it. Okay, so the last thing in this script, just really briefly to show you what we do by some of the ability to set expectations and predictability. So these were some navigational terms. So these were the main tabs up at the top. And before we even got into the prototype, we were concerned that people might not know what all of these areas of the site really were. Did we have the right labels? Did we have the right nomenclature in place? So before we even let them click through to see what was on the page, the ones that we thought might be confusing or might not be accurate were mixed in with some ones that we were pretty sure were correct. So we didn't just ask them the ones that we thought were ambiguous, we mixed in some that we knew were good labels anyway, so that as people were being asked the question, some are good, some are bad, they didn't realize after the third item that, hey, all of these are ambiguous, you know, they're all gonna be bad. So we mixed in some good ones. And so we just asked, if you were to click on a navigational tab that said business practices, what would you expect to find? What information would be there? If you clicked on awards, what information would be there? So they know what the site is because they're seeing the home page. We've told them that. This is the corporate site for company X. But if you clicked on corporate fast facts, if you clicked on information about the company bank, you know, whatever it happens to be, what would you expect to find there? We want to see, are the labels predictive?
I actually think when I'm reading this, it's different. I think that the tabs, the main tabs, what do you see? And then where would you expect to find this kind of information within the tabs that are not named those things?
Sorry, this one. These are the main tabs. Okay. Yes. Okay. What would you expect to find there? And then this one is the second question. I thought I had gone back far enough. Sorry about that.
This is a building test right there.
There you go. Yeah, Dave's inability to use the keyboard and pay attention. Please tell me which of the main tabs you would expect to find the following. So now they see what the tabs are. If you wanted information about business practices, where would you go? If you wanted to find the webcast archive, where would you go? Right. So yeah, sorry, I thought I had gone back to this one. So here we were testing the tabs, and then we were asking, of those tabs, where would you find this? So it's just about the predictability of the nomenclature. So we assess that first. We don't always do this, right? In this particular case, there is risk in doing this before we get someone into the prototype. Do you know what that risk would be? So they're looking at the home page, and I'm asking them about the nav tabs and these categories of content. Yeah.
They're going to expect these to be in the prototype.
Exactly.
They'll skew it.
I'm setting expectations about the content and structure of the site before they have even gone in to explore the site, right? So they now know that there is a leadership and board of directors page. And I have a task in number one to go find the board of directors. So I have already told them, before they even surf through that site, that there's information about the board of directors. So I've poisoned the test a little bit, right? When I ask them to go find the board of directors, they already know that there's a board of directors page, and I've even asked them where they think it's going to be. So when I ask them, go find the board of directors and see if this guy's on it, they've already been asked, in which tab do you think it is? And so they're going to go look for that tab if they remember. They're going to go look for that tab, and they're going to expect to find Board of Directors there.
So what do? Do you not do this then?
We did it in this particular case because these things were, it was information that people expected to be on the site. It should be there. It's not like this was new or unique.
And as a designer, I mean, those are the questions we're asking ourselves, or you should be when we're doing the site layout and navigation. Some of the hardest things is this name, right? So you're asking for verification back from the users.
So what we did in this particular case, in all honesty, is that we asked this of the first few people, and when we got really consistent responses, we dropped it from the test. So that, you know, the first four or five people, it's working, the labels are fine. Skip this part, get rid of the expectation problem. The remaining seven or eight people, they're not going to get this foreshadowing. We won't ask those questions, and we'll see if it changes the performance on the test. So in this particular case, we weren't really concerned because people said this is information that should be on the site. They knew it was going to be there, just not necessarily where. And then once we confirmed that the locations were okay, we dropped it from some of the participants. But it was a risk because I was essentially telling people about what's on the site. Okay, any other questions on this particular script? No? All right, so this prototype is just an example in terms of fidelity and clickability. This particular one was done with Fireworks. You can also do it with Acrobat. There, the files, if you want to play with it, the click-through prototype Fireworks file, the source file, is here, so you can just right-click and save locally. There's also a video screencast of how this prototype was created, so you can actually watch how it was done in Fireworks, if that happens to be the tool that you're using. There are other tools that you can use, so Balsamiq, the other wireframing tools, OmniGraffle, Visio, InDesign, you can do it in Acrobat, so this just happens to be what we use and the tool that I use at Fluid. But there are other options for doing clickable prototypes, so you don't have to feel obligated to use this one. It's just an example of how it is done. The assignment for next week, for 2 weeks, is going to be to make a prototype and to write a script for the task that you're going to ask people to do.
A lot.
Well, we say two key tasks, meaning that there's got to be at least two components of the thing you want people to do. Like, find a particular product and then buy it. That's two key tasks, Find information about a particular cave tour, register for it. Find information about kids' kung fu classes, send that information to your ex so that they can register your child for the class.
That's a bit much
whatever it happens
manageable.
To be. Right? It doesn't have, I wanted to break the model of find, buy, so find, send. Right. So it's not that you have to do two completely different things, you know, like buy something and then register for an account or whatever, right? Write a script for testing. So we've got a model script up there in terms of like the intro and how you can think about breaking your tasks down. But remember that model script has problems because it's too directive. So as you're reading it, think to yourself, why is this bad? Why is it too directive? How do I avoid this in my own script? You'll probably have to create some additional wireframes, additional schematics, because you're not going to have everything that you need. I think the typical prototype on average is coming in between about 12 and 15 wireframes. So you should have 9 or 10 at this point. So a handful of additional wireframes are always necessary. Here's the best part about the prototype. If you haven't been posting wireframes to this point in time, if you have that little note on your page, not yet posted, not yet posted, not yet posted for the wireframes, if you come in 2 weeks with a complete prototype and a script, I know you've done all your wireframes. So you don't have to go back and retroactively post 3 sets of wireframes if you have a complete functional prototype, right? You've done it all, and the only way you're doing a prototype is to have 10 to 15 wireframes, so I know you've done them. So that's a good thing. You do not need to post your prototype to your page, just post your script. Because chances are your prototype files are going to be too big and too numerous if you're doing something clickable. If you're doing paper, you don't have anything to post, right? So bring your prototype, bring a copy of your script, but you only need to post your script to your personal wiki page. So once again, the way it's going to work then, 2 weeks, we're not going to meet on Monday, is we're going to take basically 5 minute blocks of time. We're going to break up into groups of three. Each group will have a moderator, a participant, and an observer. What we try to do is have one person test their site and then rotate within that group and have them switch roles so that who was the participant becomes the moderator or the observer or something like that. We try initially to not test your site with other participants who have redesigned your site. So if you did Hardy Peanuts Farm, your participant should not be another Hardy Peanuts person until later in the evening when we've run out of people. Initially, you want your participants to be people who work on other projects. I don't care if the moderator and the observer work on the same site, but I don't want the moderator and the participant to have worked on the same site. It's going to bias your results.
You were saying so we should do these around 5 minutes?
Yeah.
And it has to be around 5 minutes?
Target to be finished in 5 minutes or less, right? It sometimes goes a little bit over, but what we try to do is run two tests per group about every 10 to 15 minutes. So we assume 5 minutes per test, a little bit of setup, a little transition. So I rotate at 15-minute increments. So we try to do two tests per group every 15 minutes. And we try to keep switching the groups around as long as we can so that everyone has the opportunity, ideally, to test two or three people on their prototype. It goes pretty fast. We mix up the groups every two tests or every 15 minutes. We mix up the groups and you redivide yourselves. We've got a good number of people in here, so we actually have the opportunity to mix a lot.
When you say 5 minutes a test, does that mean for both tasks?
Yes. Yeah, to complete your prototype. From the time you sit down and say, let's get started, I've got a few questions for you, to the time that you say, thank you for your time, your feedback was valuable. We're targeting about 5 minutes. If it runs a minute over, it's okay, because we've got a 15-minute block in which to do two tests. If you have laptops and you're planning to do a clickable prototype and you're willing to bring your laptop to class in order to run your prototype, that would be awesome because we're not in a lab here and I've only got one laptop. So for those of you who have laptops and you're willing to bring them in for your own prototype or to share and let someone else run their prototype on it, that would be great. We just run the prototype off of a USB drive or something, so we don't even need to install crap onto your computer. It should just be like a clickable PDF or HTML files if you're not doing paper. And that way we can get multiple screens going around the room. So if you're willing to bring your laptop and share, thank you very much. You don't have to, I don't want to obligate you, but if you want to bring your own and just run your own on it, we'll make fun of you, but you can do that. Any questions on the script, the prototype, the tasks that we're doing, what the goals are? Pardon?
Can I make it spooky?
Can you make it spooky? Yeah, we're going to meet on Halloween.
Really?
Isn't that the 31st?
Yeah.
So Monday the 31st is Halloween. I'll warn you in advance, my office is having a costume contest that day, and I come here directly from work. I have no idea what I am going to show up like. May or may not be in makeup and or costume, I don't know.
Watch out those pop-ups.
But if any of you are also doing things at your offices or home or neighborhood or just for fun in costume anyway, feel free to show up in costume. It's not going to make any difference to me. Because I may be in some form of costume and or makeup myself. If you have any questions, drop me a note and let me know. Once again, you only need to post your script, not the full prototype, because it's probably going to be too big. And I will see you in 2 weeks for our final class, where everyone gets to be a guinea pig for everyone else.